Melinda.
Hi, Melinda. Jamie's here.
Hey. So beautiful to hear your voice finally. How was your day today?
It was good. Thank you.
Good. It may be just you and I on the call for today, so I'm going to call you the big winner because you're going to get exclusive content today. I have a couple of people, three or four, that are kind of still on the fence, and the cart for this product is open until Friday. So we're going to just allow space for people to kind of opt in at the last minute, and they may be with us next week or not. But either way, you invested in this, and so I intend to give you the best things that I have to honor the place that you're at. So hopefully that makes you really excited. If it makes you really uncomfortable, that's okay too. But I think it's just you and I for this afternoon.
Okay.
You are, logistically, you're in Colorado, is that right?
I am, yes.
Okay. So I'll start out just a little bit by just checking the logistics. You were able to log on to Teachable, and you were able to see the videos and download the tools. All of that worked okay for you?
I was able to log on, and I was able to see the videos. I couldn't download the worksheets, but I was going to try on a personal device, so that was my work laptop, and they have a lot of times they block stuff.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I was going to try this week on a personal device. I just need to upload the software to it and then try on a new computer that I got, see if it's just the work laptop or if I'm having issues with the
phone. Gotcha. Okay, beautiful. That is a brand new platform for me, and I there's some things that are beautiful about it, but I don't have the access on your side. So I'm really open to any kind of feedback about things that didn't work, things that were unexpected, so that I can service that as you see it. And then we can always send you those worksheets. I can always send those to you directly while we work out whatever the kinks might be there.
Okay.
So let me start by just telling you a little bit about me and how I came to be in the place where you originally found me. So I am in the second year of business. I trained almost exactly 2 years ago this month to become a coach, and it was my business was founded because I was trying to solve my weight problem. So I come from a family of heavy women. My mother is 70, and she's still heavy. It probably will be with her whenever she leaves this earth. And she was the person who perpetually dieted, always on a diet, always putting life off until, which is really kind of interesting in retrospect, because my father was the person who had her size didn't matter to him. He was totally in love with her, and if she never walked the town, it was fine. But her own thoughts kept her kind of on the sidelines of her life. And so for a long time, I didn't diet. I did not really gain weight until I got to be in my middle 20s, and I went through a divorce, and I broke from the church that I had grown up in, and a lot of trauma happened all in a short space, and food became the way to comfort myself or the way to rebel. Like, okay, so a lot of things are really outside of my control, but I can control whatever I put in my mouth. I've lost weight. I've lost 100 pounds twice. My preferred method was Weight Watchers. And even today, if I were to go and sign up for Weight Watchers, my weight would come off very quickly. But the disturbing part is it came back. And I really had no cognition about why, after I'd worked so hard, did it come back. And so 2 years ago, I had three grown children. My last kid was graduating from high school. And I said, okay, so now everybody's self-reliant. They don't need my money and my time so much anymore. So this is my quest. I was 49, and I didn't want to be 50 without some answers. And so while I had controlled food for periods of time, maybe as much as a year at a time had controlled food before I slipped backwards, I had never really exercised. And so I spent a ton of money hiring a trainer at the local gym. And I fate or the universe or whatever spirituality thing I believe in protected me because I hired that person sight unseen, and she was about 100 pounds soaking wet. But she saw past my outer packaging and really kind of intrigued me. She's like, I'll show you. You think your body is weak, but I'll show you what your body can do, even at this weight. And so for a year, we worked out 3 times a week. I was religiously in there with her. I got crazy strong, got my balance back, got my, I want to say dexterity, but that's the wrong word, got my stability back. But I hadn't lost a pound at the one-year mark. And so she asked me, she said, I don't understand. You're in here religiously. I see how hard you're working when you come here. I want you to go the 3 days between now and when we get together again. I want you to write everything that you eat. And I immediately, like, went and hid. Was like, okay, so, and she's, you know, we had built a relationship by that time. She's like, so why, what's that reaction? And I said, if I ever told anybody what I really ate, you'd quit working with me immediately. And so she said, no, if you'll trust me, come back, write everything. And so I took that next 3 days kind of like in trying to push her away from me. Like, I'm going to write down everything I eat. I'm not going to moderate the way I eat. I'm going to eat just the crappiest that I've ever eaten. And I'm going to then show you why the weight's not going away. And so I showed up 3 days later at the gym, and I handed her the paper and kind of took a pose, like with my hands up in front of my face, like protective. And she looked at it, and she goes, oh. And so that totally explains why you're not losing weight. Not, okay. Is there any of this that you're willing to change? And at the time, I wasn't. I was very clear on that. It was like, I can show up here and I can exercise and I can feel good about my mobility and my way to carry myself in the world, but I'm not ready to moderate food. And so we switched, and she said, well, I'll help you do anything you want. So if weight loss is not your current solution, then what do you want? I'm like, okay, so I want to be strong. I want to be able to get out of the car without looking like I'm 20 years older than I am. I want to be able to dance with my boyfriend. I want to do these other things. And so we kind of switched lanes, which was the first time for me as a person with extra weight, I'd ever gotten the message that it was okay not to want to lose weight at that time, to just admit that I knew I wasn't there mentally. Fast forward a little bit, she got assigned to another gym. I thought that all of my success was connected to the relationship between her and I, and I stopped going and started looking for answers again. And that's when I found this coaching world. So a little bit about the coaching world and kind of the path that I want to show you is I knew at that point that emotions were part of the problem I was trying to solve. I was aware that there was emotions that I didn't feel that I covered over with food. But I had no idea exactly what they were, and I knew that there was pain underneath them, and I had no mechanism to deal with that pain. And so the teacher that I crossed paths with, her premise was that everything that you feel is generated by something that you think. And that most of your thought is subconscious. It's been offered to you or it's been conditioned to it or whatever, but it's still being generated within your body. And if you can figure out why you think what you think, then you have an opportunity to choose differently. And that was a six-week program, very much like this one that I signed up for. And by week three of the program, I was like, I have to train to do this, and I have to give this to other women whose only options are Weight Watchers or Lean Cuisine. That doesn't deal with the root level of why they do what they do with food. So that was very intriguing to me. It made me feel very powerful. It's like if it's being created within my body and it's not coming from an outside source, say an ex-husband or a mother or all the other people who might cause emotion in your world, it's all coming from within me. I have control over that. And so I spent the last 2 years exploring that and really digging, like, why can't I go weeks without eating anything processed, and then that one day I'm eating a family-sized bag of Doritos? Why is it that food talks to me from the cabinet? Why? What is it that makes that happen? And so I don't know how much of the sales information you looked at, but the path to that in this 6 weeks is looking at two major players. One is that inner mean girl, that shitty talker, that speaks to us the way we don't speak to other people, and figuring out how to either quiet her voice or to get her to retire, and the drama queen, who is really, really interested in telling stories that happened some time ago as if they happened today, and renewing that pain over and over again. So this course kind of takes us on an overview. If you haven't ever been exposed to coaching, or you've been exposed and you kind of don't really know if this is your path, it's going to give you a really good taste of what the deeper work looks like, right? You're going to get some major clues as to why you do what you do, why you haven't been successful yet. And depending on how connected you are to the work or not, how interactive you are with the work or not, you might get all the answers you need in 2 months. Generally, what I see is most women who are really ready to do this work, they need about 3 months to connect to the idea that they have the power to change what's happened already. And then they need another 3 months to really practice it in a place of accountability, to come back and go, okay, so that didn't work, let me try something else, to where you really start to be different in the world. Okay? So what it's not is it's not mantras. It's not simple thought switching. It is really working with the way that your brain already processes information and offering alternatives to the things that show up without your permission. Okay, so I am in the middle of my weight journey. I have decided that it is worth however much time it takes. If it takes 5 years, I'm okay with that because I don't plan to ever be at this place again. A question I get real often is how much body weight have I lost? And the body weight is not significant, but the mental weight and the understanding why I do what I do has been, I'm a completely different person than I was 24 months ago. And my supposition and my belief is that as I solve those things, the weight no longer needs to be on my body. Okay, so weight, in my opinion, weight is a way to get your attention and say, hey, there's something that needs to be dealt with, and I don't have any other way to deal with it than to get your attention and get you focused on weight loss so that you can find these other answers. All right, so tell me a little bit about how you found me. And I was going back and reading over the answers that you gave on the application. And I really liked when I said, why is now the right time to invest in yourself? You said, I want to do the harder work related to the emotions I'm running away from. So I'd like to know as much as you know about what those emotions are and what you think has kept you from getting where you want to be already.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have kind of traveled in some circles with, like, Brooke Castillo and Susan Hyatt and some of those circles.
Brooke is my original teacher.
Okay, so, like, I read her book, you know, like, If I'm So Smart, Why Can't I Lose Weight?
Yeah. Right.
And I've watched some of her videos, and I've, you know, looked at some of the stuff that Susan Hyatt puts out and all of that kind of stuff. And so that's where how I think we crossed paths is probably on social media through some mutual
awesome.
Right?
Okay, cool.
And so I live in a very intellectual space, right? Like, I put myself in a very intellectual space. And things will make sense to me logically. I totally understand it. I get this hunger scale thing. I understand the general idea of, you know, thought drives feelings, right? Right. Like, I get the model, but I have, working independently, I have not been able to do anything with it because I keep myself in that intellectual space.
Yes.
And I try to think my way through it.
You don't know how excited that makes me that you're already exposed to that work. Because a lot of people kind of fall in that space. They're like, okay, so, like, I get it. That makes sense. But then the implementation, kind of we fall off. We're like, I don't know exactly how to make that happen in real practice. And if you were to talk to my clients, and that is something that's available to you, that is kind of the genius of my space. Brooke paints this big picture for us, which, again, when the story of my life is told, she will be a pivotal person because the information she brought to me completely changed the way I saw the world. But she does not provide the nuts and bolts of how to make this happen. And so I'm really excited that you're already familiar with those ideas and we can then run with them to make them be something that is just in your bones instead of something that you intellectually understand and it stays in that plane. Okay, so tell me, in that work that you were exposed to her, where did you kind of fall off in the implementation? Where did it go from I can't go past intellectual to actually using this to make my life different?
Oh, pretty much anywhere. Like, in the sense that I can be like, oh, let me try and do this exercise. Okay, now I'm bored, or now I'm feeling stuff I don't understand, or now I'm just frustrated, and you know what, I'll come back and I'll deal with that later, and then whatever, I come back, right? And, you know, I think that I'm particularly struggling when I think back. You know, I grew up in a family that really didn't express and talk about emotions a lot, feelings a lot.
Okay.
You know, like, I mean, we all love each other. It's not like it's a, you know, a bad family or anything, right? Like, it's not like it was bad. I wasn't abused or anything. But it was not like there wasn't a lot of permission to just feel. And so I can even remember, you know, being upset, being a teenager, being upset about something my parents did. And I was crying in the shower because I didn't want them to know I was crying. They made me cry.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right.
So you were a self-contained unit. Your emotions, if you dealt with them, were within your own body. Okay.
Yeah, and so, like, when I kind of sit there and say, okay, what am I feeling? Like, I am having a hard time actually feeling it and really and kind of comprehending it or understanding it or just even just feeling it, right? You know, I suppress those.
Okay.
And so I think that is why it has been so hard to try and do any of it independently.
Okay, so tell me what your foods are. Like, when you're at a place where food comes in to take care of all of that energy, are you a salty, a sweet, or what are the foods that come to you that you wish were not in your diet? So talk to me a little bit about that part.
Yeah, so that would be more of the salty or, like, you know, burgers and pizza kind of those kinds of stuff. Right, I can totally go. I mean, if I go and I'm like, oh, there's that really great burger on the menu, there's no way I'm not getting that. Or, you know, like the bag of Doritos. You know, I don't really have a major problem with sweets.
Right.
you know, no, I mean, if I have really great, high-quality chocolate sitting in, then I probably won't be able to just have a bite. It was actually really funny. I had some friends in from out of town for my birthday, and we had stopped and got coffee or whatever for them, and it was at this chocolate shop, my favorite chocolate shop. And so they got these, like, dark chocolate toffee things that are, like, kind of my favorite thing, right? And they got them. I didn't get anything. It was fine. And I watched this guy, and he had, like, a couple of bites, and he put it away. And then, you know, the next day, he had a couple of bites he put away. And, you know, 2 days later, he had some to take home with him, right? What is that? I don't understand what that is.
Sure.
If I have something like that that's sweet, you know, I may go ahead and eat it, but I don't, like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to the store to get something sweet.
Gotcha.
Right.
Okay.
That's not really the thing. It's going to be more of, you know, kind of the salty stuff or the substantive stuff.
Okay. And so tell me what you know about your habits. Is it a stress feeling? Is it overwhelm? Is it sadness? Is it late in the day? Is it early in the morning? Whatever your dysfunction currently with food is, tell me what you know about that. What triggers it? What solves it, what the conversation in your head is right before or right after you eat it?
So my biggest issue is later in the day. Like, I'm good. Okay. I'll be good up until about 3 o'clock or so, and that's when it's like, okay. And when I say I'll be good, you know, like, I'm not, like, I don't feel like I'm, what is it, like, storm eating or whatever earlier in the day.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
In the afternoons or evenings, that's when it tends to be more of a challenge for me.
Okay.
And
you live as a family, or you live alone, or what's the dynamics there?
I am single and live alone.
Okay.
And so I can tell you what I think, but I don't know what I feel, right?
Right.
So I do think that there's some boredom that's happening in late afternoon, evening, when kind of the work day is wrapping up. So I will often work from home. I also travel a lot for work. So I'm either traveling, but when I'm in town, I usually work from home. And I love my job. I love my job, and I'm awesome at my job. And I get a lot of feelings of, like, I feel good with work, right? And so when that work day is kind of starting to come to the close, I'll start to really struggle more.
Okay.
You know, because there's, like, I just don't know what else to do. Like, well, what else? I don't want to clean house, and I don't want to do laundry. I can binge on Netflix. I can work more. I can whatever. And then I also find myself eating when I, like, if I'm, like, on a conference call for work or something, or if I get a call from a colleague and I'm just frustrated as all get out, like, maybe I'm mad about what they're saying, or I think that they're holding up my project, or, you know, there's something it's not just a feeling of stress. It's more than just stress. It's more of a conflict-based thing where now I'm either mad or frustrated with you, whoever I just talked to.
Okay.
And I know that in those cases, and even if it's not even a direct thing, it can just be on a conference call and I'm frustrated with the direction that call is going.
Right.
I have literally gotten in my car and been like, screw this, I'm going to get something to eat while I'm still on the conference call.
Yep. Okay. So in that space, if you stay in that space for just a minute, you are frustrated. You're a passive participant at that point. You can't either redirect them, or you're going to have to work around them. So that level of frustration. You're going through the drive-thru. You're still connected to the call. Can you get to the place where you take the first bite of whatever it is that you choose? What do you feel at that first bite?
Relief. I don't know if that's a feeling, but.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let me make sure I'm clarifying. A lot of the work I do that is a little different from the way Brooke speaks, it is based on her work. But your mind can have 27 versions of frustration, right? There's frustration with your dog. There's frustration with your workmate. There's frustration with your boss. There's frustration with a little kid. But your body experiences frustration in probably 3 or 4 different ways. So a lot of the work that we'll do, I'm going to ask you to go into your body. Like, what do you feel literally in your body when you're taking that first bite of hamburger or that first bite of fries? So is it like an overall loosening of your body? Is it a calming thing washing over you? What is it you're feeling actually in your body?
It's like taking a big exhale. So if you think about, like, it's at night and you hear a noise and you, like, and then you realize, oh, it's just a squirrel, and you go, that is
excellent. Okay. So that is your first aha as we go through this 8 weeks together. Is we're gonna continue every conversation to make you fluent in Jamie, because your body, that GPS, that feeling of either of any emotion, tightness, restriction, I'm not safe, I'm frustrated, whatever that is, or the other side, the release, the letdown, the comfort, whatever it is. Once you figure out what those things feel like in your body, you start to kind of create a space between the thought about eating and the actual eating, where you can go, what is that about? Why am I doing that? So as an example, I had a get-together here at my house with my husband and my very best friend. I could not have been in a safer environment. And we were watching a movie with a controversial topic. And anger is the emotion I am least in touch with. I don't like conflict. I avoided it for a lifetime, and now I'm having to learn that skill. And as they debated between themselves, as the tenor of their voices got higher, I totally panicked. Like, I could feel like if I was a turtle, like pulling my arms and legs inside my shell and checking to make sure that nobody could get in. And it's like, okay, so why am I reacting that way? I know my body. When I'm having that physical reaction in my body, something's going on. And the longer story is, I go back and I was like, when I grew up in a very controlling environment, and when voices were raised, you were not safe. And your only option was to acquiesce. And I was often very angry because I didn't want to acquiesce. But I was a kid. There was not another choice. And so now I know when I feel that, I felt it a couple of times since then, and then when I feel it in my body, I'm like, you are misinterpreting what's happening right this moment because that old trigger is coming in. Okay, so you don't need to eat. Or maybe you do, but at least you start to understand why you eat in those spaces. Okay? So we're looking for two things as we go along. What words keep showing up? Okay, so if frustration, conflict is something that keeps showing up, that's a place for us to kind of dig. And if that sensation of letting your breath out is associated with food, we want to see if there's other ways that we can produce that same sensation in your body. Because what I'll offer to you is the reason it works that way as soon as you take a bite is because your mind stops playing that same thought over and over. It's now into food. And the release of that thought gives you the feeling. But we've only ever experienced it with food, so we associate that it's the food that is making us feel that relief. Okay? So that awareness, you have great awareness, and that gives you a step up for this, what can be accomplished in this 8 weeks. That was one example. If you know other examples, tell me more. Let me talk less and listen more about where you might eat where you don't need to eat, or where you're eating and you know it's not about hunger.
Okay, so another thing that happens is those, you know, late afternoon evenings, called early evenings, at home, where, you know, like I'll have something to eat for dinner or something, right? And I eat that, and then, like, or right, so for whatever reason, that's not enough. So then I go get something else, and I go get something else. And I know that I'm not hungry. In fact, at times, I am physically full. Like, I'm uncomfortably full, and I will still go get something else to eat.
Okay. Okay. So your body just keeps searching. Your mind says, yeah, no, that wasn't it. No, that wasn't it. No, that wasn't it.
Okay. Yes.
What would happen if you just were still? If you didn't get up, if you still had all of those same thoughts, but you did not get up and go in the kitchen, would the thoughts accelerate? Would they eventually just kind of take you out? Or what would happen if you did not act on thoughts?
I'm not entirely sure.
Okay. When you think about just sitting still, what does that bring up for you? So you're in that headspace. Your body's saying, no, that wasn't it. Let me go see, find something else. You're kind of caught in that loop. When you think about just sitting still and going, I'm not going to get up, I hear you talking to me, but I'm not going to get up, what sensation does that bring up? Does it make your body tighter? Does it make you feel panic? Does it make you feel rebellion? What's there?
Restless.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a shift, right? Like, so shift, you know, a lot of shifting. I think okay. that my heart rate is probably coming up a little bit.
Okay.
Maybe not quite a panic, but like a slight kind of start to panic kind of a thing.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So those are important clues to whatever is at the core for you. That feeling of I'm not safe, or I am feeling anxiety, I'm feeling out of control, and the control comes back whenever we get up and act on the thought. Okay. Would you describe yourself as a perfectionist on any level?
Yes.
Okay. So that's the player in the game, absolutely. And I tell myself a recovering, because I don't know that you ever let go of those tendencies completely. I'm aware that they're always kind of in the background. But it is part of the things that we'll talk about during this 8 weeks as well. So I don't know if you've had a chance to read the books that I sent you. But the mindset book by Carol Dweck is very, very interesting in relation to perfectionism. So let me tell you a little bit about that.
I started reading some of it.
They did experiment or testing experiment. That sounds awful because it's with little kids. They did a study on five-year-olds. And they gave them a progressively harder and harder puzzle, like a jigsaw puzzle, to do. And then observed what their response was. And so at 5 years old, it's kind of too young to really have a lot of outside conditioning come in yet. You're kind of getting whatever the attribute that you're born with at that stage of the game. So they very clearly came out with two groups. You had one group who eventually got to a puzzle that they could not solve. And instead of wanting to get the next harder puzzle and try to figure it out, they got real excited about doing the same puzzle over and over and kind of like, ta-da, look, I did it. They found the plane, the thing that they were good at. They got meaning and worth out of doing the same thing at an excellent level every time. And were not interested in trying something harder and failing and kind of figuring it out. Then you had another group of kids who totally got off on the unsolvable. Like, no, give me another chance. I can figure it out. No, I don't want to go back to the one I already did. I already did that. Let me go to a harder one. and let me do that, and let me try to figure it out. And the joy and the celebration wasn't in the solving. It was in the mental exercise of, I think I can figure this out. I think I, you know, I can use what I already did. I can do all of that mental energy to try to figure out this puzzle. And so they took that and extrapolated it across grown-ups. And she gives you lots of examples of their and famous people who are in both groups. So the first group that wants to do the same puzzle over and over are fixed mindset people. They think they have a natural talent at something. They're very, very good at it. And they don't believe that they can learn to be that excellent at something else. And so that's a lot of athletes, a lot of CEOs of major companies. And she gives you examples of how that played out in their life, how it affected that kind of thinking affected their trajectory. And then the other group are the group that say, you know what, I can learn anything. I might not have been born an athlete, but if I practice enough, I can be an athlete. Or I could be a whatever. I could, you know, I could be a life coach. If I apply myself enough and I'm willing to fail and I'm willing to learn from those lessons, then I can do anything. And the praise doesn't come from the outside like the fixed mind people. The praise comes from inside my own heart that says, you're willing to try that and see if you can go somewhere. And those people are growth-minded. Now, most of us are somewhere in the middle. I can clearly look back and see that my perfectionist tendencies kept me in a fixed mindset for a long time. I'm really good at numbers. I'm really good at organization. Because of the experience as a young child, I'm really good at talking to people I've never met before. But when it came to building the business, none of those really served me. I really needed to be able to take a chance and learn the things that I didn't know. And so if you get time to read, that is a really excellent look to be able to go, where do I fit in? You'll see yourself in some places. We're not all one or the other. But this work of knowing why you do what you do is much more growth-minded. And the exciting part about that is because that means you're not stuck with what's already happened in the past. Right, so if you've gained and lost, or you're eating in a way you don't want to eat, you're not stuck with that. That it is a changeable behavior. Okay, so tell me a little about how much you want to lose, like what your end goal is, and what your weight loss history has been up to this point.
Okay, so I would probably like to lose kind of 50 to 60 pounds.
Okay.
I'm at like 226 right now.
Okay.
And so kind of that mid 160, 170 is where I'm very comfortable at.
Okay. The last time you were at that weight was how long ago?
It would have been about 8 years ago.
Okay.
Probably. So probably about 8 years ago.
Okay.
And then I would say about 4 years ago, I was at around 180, so I wasn't too far off from there. So this is the heaviest I've ever been. But I've always kind of been in that 165 to 200, up, down, since high school, right?
Okay.
And so this year, well, I guess it really started last year, I started kind of passing that 200 mark, and then it just has been like a bigger snowball, if you will. Like it's been, you know, 30 pounds in a year, in just over a year that I've gained.
Okay.
And
you think it's just it's what we described already, that boredom, that little just, it's creeped on you a little at a time? Or has there been a higher level of stress? Okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't feel like there's anything, like, major from a life change standpoint or anything like that. I have the same Yeah, I have the same job, which I love. I've been living in the same house in the same city for 5 years. You know, there hasn't been any kind of major life change. Where I have found, and one of the things that I really want to change is that as an adult, in the past, when I've had really great success and I've lost weight and I've been feeling really great and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, and I've been, you know, kind of living more of a lifestyle that I want to live. If I look back, every single one of those times was related to a man. Like I was interested in a man, or I started dating a man or whatever. And, you know, like I wanted to be more fit for him, or I wanted to be skinnier for him to feel so I could be attractive and sexy for him. And so that's a pattern, and I don't want to kind of continue to repeat that because I don't want to do that for someone else.
So I love that. A couple of things that you said. Twice I've heard you say, I didn't have a really bad history, nothing really bad happened, there's nothing big. So that resonates with me. For years I had watched people on Oprah who had a large amount of weight to lose, and they had been molested or had terrible parents or they had some kind of big story in the background. And I always said, nothing like that happened to me. I can't point to one big thing that made this happen. So to hear you reiterate that really kind of excites me. You found there were some messages that you got somewhere, and we'll uncover them during this time. But I want to just let you know that it doesn't need to be something big. Just if you can think about somewhere your brain got the wrong translation. Okay, so imagine if you were learning a new language and you got some words turned around, and every time you read it, it doesn't make sense because you got the wrong word, you got a wrong translation. That's what's happened with most of us. And figuring out that translation, then you get a pretty quick traction once you can see, oh, I am reading that incorrectly. I am not getting accurate information. The other is, I love that you're doing it for yourself, because that lasting work will stay whatever your life situation is. So if you're single, you're not single, you have kids, whatever happens, you build those habits that just become the way you are in the world, and then you can manage, you can be at that place where the guy you were talking about with the chocolate that has something to take home 3 days later. Susan Hyatt is a perfect example. You become a woman who lives well as life happens. So you're not at that place of up and down and I don't understand why this happened and I'm always starting over. That is my highest goal for myself and for anybody who invests in themselves through me. Weight loss is one thing. It is a period of our life. But sustainable weight loss really comes from being able, understanding what your body needs, why it needs it, and being willing to meet that standard on a regular basis. Okay? So all of those things are very exciting to me as I know the things that are coming forth for the next week. I don't know if you're a place where you can see the worksheet, but I've got one in front of me. And then the recording I will post up on the site so that you guys can listen to it and fill it in when you have access. But there was a worksheet called The Truth I Know About My World. And this is kind of our measuring stick 8 weeks from now to go, did I shift? Do I think differently now than I did then? And how does that change the way I eat? How does that change the way I interact with the world? Okay. So I'm going to just call these off. We're going to do a little brainstorming, and then, again, we can go back and fill in a written copy from the recording when you have that availability. One other thing I want to offer is every time we talk, I'm going to just reiterate to you that all of us as humans are programmed to take action. I'm going to start a new diet. I'm going to clean out the stuff out of my house. I'm going to work out. I'm going to whatever the action is. And action works for a little while. but your thoughts can move so much faster than action. So while we will talk about diet and what you should eat and how to decide what to eat and all that kind of stuff, we get much more traction by staying in the world of thought. Because if you can really shift one thought, it will take the place of 100 actions. Okay, so as we go through this, it's a natural tendency for us to want to go back to action. I'm going to take this action. But thoughts serve us much, much, much better. Okay, so weight loss. So this is a 5 categories. What do I think is true about the world? And the things that you currently think are true are what drives your decision-making, right? So, for instance, in the category of food, I used to say Doritos are my nemesis. I can never resist them if they're within reach of my body. So I made a lot of decisions based on what I believe to be absolutely true. So let's start with weight loss. And I'm looking for the top 3, top 5 things that you believe to be true about weight loss.
Okay. So I think weight loss is, or I believe weight loss is restrictive.
Okay.
I believe weight loss is necessary to find a partner.
Ah, okay.
And I believe weight loss is temporary.
Yeah, okay. Love that. Okay. So that drives the choices we make. Yeah, okay. Food. Food in general. What do you believe about food?
I believe that food is comforting. I believe food is out of my control. And I believe that food calms me.
Okay. Time.
So I believe time is difficult to manage. I believe that time for me is one of extremes, either super productive or super wasteful.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
And I believe time is taken up with the must-dos.
Okay, so there's no surplus.
I wouldn't go so far as to say there's no surplus because I have the super wasteful times of Netflix binging and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that when I have blocks of time, like I feel an obligation to do the adulting task.
Gotcha.
You know, I need to do my laundry. I need to clean my house. I need to run and pick up dry cleaning. I need to do blah, blah, blah. And
okay.
So I will, that's what time is good for, is to do all of those.
Time is about doing, not about being.
Absolutely.
Okay. So something like meditation, is that a valuable use of time, or there's not time for that? There's too many other things that are in that space.
I think that meditation sounds great in the abstract.
Okay.
I'm not sure that I would prioritize something like that for use of my time.
So I'm going to share 2 pieces of information with you. I have a client that she's been with me since the beginning, so almost 2 years. And in January of this year, I was talking to her about meditating. She had moved from a home office to a shared office space. And she has teenagers and a lot of things going on in her house. And so I said, what if you took the first 10 minutes that you walked in that office and you could close the door and turn off your phone and you had 10 minutes to just kind of center yourself? And I could almost hear her roll her eyes over the phone. She's like, perhaps you don't understand. I've got like 6 hours where people are going to want me again and I have to make every minute count in this office. And today, she's a huge meditator. And so it's always interesting at the entry point. When I was in California in May for a yearly meeting with Brooke Castillo and all of her trained coaches. and the speaker that was speaking to us that day was talking to us about meditation. And so you've got a room full of trained coaches who are saying, I don't have time for that. I don't know how to do it. It feels like busy work to me. Why would this be valuable? And the gentleman said, the only way you can do meditation wrong is if you don't do it. So showing up and letting your brain have time to unravel and sift and come back is valuable, even if you think you're doing it wrong. So even those of us who are doing this work at a high level have that same thought process. Like, where would I fit that in, and why would I give that any kind of precedence? So I love that. Okay. The next one is sleep. So tell me what you believe is true about sleep.
I think there never seems to be enough of it. So even when I get like 8 or more hours, it just still doesn't seem like it's enough. I don't believe that sleep is as restful or as kind of reinvigorating as it should be.
Okay.
And I think that sleep is hard to get out of. It's probably not sleep as much as it's out of the morning ritual, but I really struggle getting out of bed.
Okay, so mornings are a place where you really push yourself, like you got to go, you got to start operating.
Yeah,
so it's time to go.
So I will stay in bed to the last possible second. If I get up, I have to get up, and I go and I take a shower and and I realize that I am 10 minutes ahead of schedule, I will crawl back into bed for 10 minutes. Wet hair.
Okay. So is it craving that you didn't get enough and kind of trying to get that, or is it that you're just not naturally a morning person? And that getting rolling process is going to be hard no matter how much sleep you got.
So I think it's both. I definitely think that I'm not a natural morning person, but I also just don't believe that sleep is as restful. Like, it's not this big restful where I wake up and I'm like, oh, you know.
Okay. So that's actually very interesting. And I asked about sleep and time on purpose because they are two big interactors with what we do with food. Okay, so a couple of things that kind of make me go perk up and go, oh, yeah, that's a good place we can talk about is those spaces of time when you're not doing, so you describe that as extreme, where you're either extremely productive or extremely wasteful. So those periods of time where you're, by your description, you're extremely wasteful are interesting to me because that's got something to do with what you do with food, the beliefs around that space. And the belief that there's never enough sleep and that sleep is not restful. Those are places that are having some effect on what you do with food. And we'll be able to uncover them over time. But there are things I've seen before, and we'll start to dig into them. Like, how long has that been with you? What's your first memory of that? Where did it come from? And sometimes it starts for one reason. Okay, so for instance, my not ever expressing anger because there was no room for that in the house I grew up with, it started for one reason. It started for survival. But the reason it continues as an adult is a completely different reason. Okay, so those are interesting places that we'll dig at as we go along. The last section is the current version of your body. So what is the truth that you know about this version, the 229-pound version of your body?
So
226 version of your body.
So I believe my body prevents me from showing up in the world or doing the things I want to do.
Okay.
I won't go hiking with friends, for example.
Okay.
I believe that my body does not fit into mainstream clothes the right way.
Okay.
And I believe that my body is not attractive or sexy.
Okay, big one. Okay, So if I were defining the relationship between you and your body, are you in a truth with your body? You're in, no, I really hate this body and I'm ready to be rid of it. You're in, I don't think this is ever going to change kind of surrender with this body.
So it's kind of in between the kind of the surrender and the shedding, where I don't think it's ever going to change, but gosh, I really want it to.
Okay, cool. So, and I say cool because, again, that gives me a little antenna. I don't know if you read the email that I sent out earlier today, but it's that space where you're like, if I were really truthful and said what I believe is true and not what is politically correct, I don't think it's ever going to change. No matter how much energy I put into it, it's never going to change. Just like my body is the one-off that's not going to respond. But at the same time, I can't make myself quit crying. I haven't gotten to the point of completely giving up on myself or moving towards the other side of the pendulum, which is kind of a fat acceptance, rebellious, love me the way I am kind of thing. Okay? So all of those things drive, again, the way that you make choices about food and time and sleep and all those factors. Okay, so I've written a version of this. I'd encourage you to go back and write a version for yourself. And the value of this is going to be to tuck away somewhere where you will see it when we finish in the middle of December. Because coaching is a very subtle thing. Like, you will know that you've changed, that you think differently, that you didn't coerce yourself into thinking differently. You actually think differently. But it won't be hard to put your finger on when you changed. And so, as a matter of course, this is something we'll do, a good coach is going to do probably every 3 months, so that you can see what those subtle changes are and go back and go, okay, so yes, I do see that I don't feel like I bullied myself into the place I am now, but it is markedly different than the way I thought 3 months ago. Okay, so you want to touch that somewhere, we'll do it again at the very end so we can see what you believe is true about the world that day and time.
Okay.
So a couple of questions as we kind of round around to the end. Our conversations are normally going to be planned for an hour. I allow an hour and a half so that if the conversation isn't at a natural end, we've got some space there. I want to ask you about gratitude practice. Do you currently have a gratitude practice, or is that something that's valuable to you at the moment?
I do not currently have a practice, and I would say that it is very valuable because I do believe wholeheartedly in the power of gratitude.
Okay. So we're going to talk a lot about joy at the end. Joy is the very last module. But I want to put some little seeds in your brain about gratitude, because sustainable joy, to be a joyful person, is always going to be connected to gratitude. So if that becomes a priority, I just want to encourage you to kind of play with what might look like a gratitude practice to you. My personal practice, I have a bowl that sits here on my desk, a pretty piece of pottery that was made by one of my friends. And I have little blank cards that are the size of a business card, and I write 3 of them every morning. I'm grateful that my husband is home from his trip. I'm grateful that I get to look at water when I look out of my window in my office. It can be anything, but it keeps your mind with that strain of gratitude that just kind of runs as a backbone or a theme. So between now and the time we talk again, you might just ponder that and go, what would really feel like gratitude to me? Is it written? Is it just internally in my head? What does that look like? What would that look like in my world? And I'll ask, if it ends up being just you and I originally planned this program as having 2 phone calls a week, one on Tuesday and one on Saturday. so that if you were in a place of struggle or had more questions or whatever, you had an extra check-in during the week. So for your time schedule, is the second call valuable to you, or it would be something we determine as we go along, or kind of how do you feel about that second phone call for this 8 weeks?
So I think for the most part, one phone call a week would be sufficient. I'm afraid that like two phone calls would be like a lot of pressure. I would feel a lot really pressured by that. I think my biggest question would be there are some weeks that I know I'm going to have conflict.
Right. Okay. So what I want to offer to you, I am leaving the cart open until Friday. So again, we may have some others join us. There are four, five, six out there who are still kind of in limbo. So they may join us and alter our plan. But if it turns out to be you and I, then let's use that flexibility that we're afforded to meet your schedule. Okay, so if you need a second call on Saturday, I'm absolutely there. If you don't need it, then we will pass. If your work schedule takes you away where you can't attend the Tuesday one and you need the main call to be on Saturday, my intention is for you to walk away from this program happy that you spent the money and changed with some answers, some real solid answers about what your next piece is. So we'll know by Friday. You have all of my contact information in the email. What is the best way? So if I wanted to get in touch with you on a shortness, so if I wanted to say Friday night, say, hey, do you need to call on Saturday? Would that be in an email or a text or a Facebook message? What is your preferred way to communicate?
Probably a text message.
Okay. And let me make sure that I have a phone number. I don't know that I do. So why don't let me get a good phone number for that text message.
Sure. It's 720.
Okay.
320.
Okay.
0980.
Great. So just after we get off, I'll just send you a text message so that you have my phone number as well. And
okay.
Just, hey, this is Melinda. And I also want to offer you that full, I am almost always connected. I'm a techie in another lifetime. So on my phone, I do email and texting and Facebook. So I want to also invite you to have that connectedness when you need it. So when, as we work through this, if you hit a place where you're either needing support or you have a question about something you're executing, that back and forth is part of what you paid for. Okay, I don't promise to always be instantaneous, but I'm pretty connected so that you would get an answer back pretty quickly. Do you have any questions about any of the things that we shared tonight or anything that I can answer from you that you came in with and we haven't addressed already?
I don't have any questions. I do plan at some point this week to load my computer and check to see if I can download those files or not.
Yes.
But I don't have the downloads today.
Okay.
And
would you
I
like me to send them an email just as a backup?
That would be awesome for, you know, just this first week.
For the first week. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I do know, obviously I know we're waiting to see if anyone else joins, but I am at a conference next week.
Okay.
And so I don't expect to be able to break away next Tuesday evening.
Okay. So would Saturday that day, that week work? Saturday at noon? So you're going to be, that's the 25th. You'll be at a conference. Saturday is the 29th. Does that work?
That should work. Yes, that should work fine.
Okay. Okay. So if we have some joiners, I'll have portions of the same conversation you and I have had, so that's no harm, no foul for them. And I'll plan that we'll have a robust call on the 29th. Now, what you, on the 21st, which is 3 days from now, the very first module will drop. And
okay.
That will be what we talk about on Saturday the 29th. We'll go through that first module and take it there. All right.
Okay,
I am so excited about where this could take us. If I can be of any help, you run into any obstacles, feel comfortable reaching out and touching me. And I'm really excited to have met you and to take us on this ride.
Awesome. I'm excited as well.
All right. Well, then I want to end the call this evening. I'll put the recording up tomorrow, and I will send you an email that gives you those downloads for this week, just in case the technical things don't work. You'll still have access to them.
Okay.
All right. All right. Have a good evening. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Melinda.
Bye-bye, Jamie.
Bye.